I am just trolling. From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Hey, get out of here, huh?
That's what you're talking
about. Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. Here I am once again, Shahan Ahmed, your host, with Joey Galino.
It's like a ghost town in the office today. It seems like the Dodgers lost yesterday, cleared everybody out.
Yeah.
It did suck. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trolling. It's just,
yeah,
you know.
I'm still mourning. And also Alex Baker.
It was a good night to stay away from your windows downtown last night after that loss. Let me tell you, the dog did not get a late walk.
Well, in the last couple days, we had a ton of Champions League matches. The group stages are all but over, only two more rounds to play, and we've got some serious clarity on which teams will more than likely make it, and also definitely some cloud and fog over some teams and some groups where we thought this would not go this way. So let's go over some of the results, but really, I think it's more important to just kind of start with the tables, and then we'll go and talk about some of the matches after that. Group A, Man U is all but in. They have 12 points. Technically, they could be caught on goal differential, but as a reminder, they have a plus 9 goal differential. They're more than likely in. Jose being told he wasn't in seemed a little bit surprised after the match and actually said, oh, then we must at least get a draw, which everybody just went, oh, no, here comes another Jose stalemate. Group B. Of course, in that group, CSKA Moscow and Basel are still both alive. Group B, PSG and Bayern both through, as we expected. PSG dominant. 17 goals for, none against. I'm going to pat myself on the back because I labeled them the number one competitor coming into this Champions League campaign, and they have done absolutely nothing to prove me wrong.
Look great.
Yeah, they look worth their money, and there's a lot of money being spent there, so that's a lot of worth to make up. Group C is kind of one of those groups that's a crapshoot, but Roma is at the top with 8 points after a demolition job on Chelsea. N'Golo Kante wasn't there, and that seems like Chelsea's not really there when he's not there, when there's actually a big opponent to play. We will touch back on that match, obviously. But Chelsea's on 7 points, looks still in pretty good position to make it through with a couple matches to go. Atletico de Madrid, whew, wow. No wins in four.
Sitting on
3 points. But this is one of those weird things where, okay, they completely bundled it against Carabag.
Twice,
yes. Like, two matches. But I will say,
it's part of the strategy, the Master Simeone strategy.
Yeah, well, one of the things I will say about Atletico Madrid, though, is that with two matches to go, you could see them beating Roma and Chelsea still.
I agree.
And because they are that...
Definitely see them beating Chelsea the way they're playing in this competition.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of one of the things that I've noticed about Atletico, though, is just you can't count them out. And so if they win their last two matches, all of a sudden there are 9 points, so they could still technically maybe win the group. No, they're probably not going to do that. But they could qualify. Let's just say that much. Group D, Barcelona on 10 points. Pretty much through, technically can be tied with Lisbon, but they have a plus 6 goal differential. They are pretty much in as well. Juve on 7 points. So Juve is in second place, looking like they should be the side to make it through, but they did not have a good performance in midweek. One to forget, definitely. Group E is another one of those where there's really no clear out-and-out winner. Liverpool at the top right now with 8 points. Sevilla on 7. Spartak Moscow on 5 and Maribor's on 1, so they're pretty much out of it. But really, any of those three teams could make it through, so we'll find out. Group F, Man City officially through. Napoli, boy, they could arguably be the second best team in Europe, but they are on 3 points. Shakhtar Donetsk on 9. Technically, Napoli could catch up to Shakhtar, but City could really just play for a draw and let Shakhtar in if they really want to. I do not see them doing that because they could have just played for a draw and gone through as, you know, top of the group.
You're confusing this with the other Manchester team, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not in Guardiola's DNA to do that.
No, they definitely go for it, and it's fun to watch. So we will come back and touch on this Man City-Napoli match for sure. And then Group G, Besiktas. Yes, Ryan Babel's Besiktas. Is on 10 points and all but through as well. Leipzig on 4, Porto on 6. So Porto, Leipzig kind of going to battle it out for that second spot, seems like. Monaco on 2 points. A little bit disappointing, but not unexpected considering everybody on that team is no longer on that team.
Yeah.
And then Group H, finally, Tottenham, 10 points through to the group stage after beating Real Madrid.
They beat who now?
Yeah, I know. It's at Wembley.
Yeah.
Wow.
Of all places.
Yeah. Real Madrid on 7. We all expect them to make it through. Borussia Dortmund, Christian Pulisic, Borussia Dortmund, 2 points after 4 matches.
Ugh.
Ouch. Apple and Nicosia also on 2 points. So, you know, we're going to come back and talk about some of those matches, but that's kind of where we stand. We have a good idea of which teams, for the most part, I would say, you know, you look at Spurs, Real Madrid, these are just teams I'm penciling in. Besiktas, that's 3. Man City, I'll say 4. Barcelona, 5. PSG, 6. Bayern, 7. Man U, 8. We pretty much have 8 of the 16 that I will pencil in, even though some of them are technically not official. That's a pretty good field so far, I'm not going to lie.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah, it's looking pretty good. But some of these matches, we definitely need to go back and talk about. So I'm gonna start with you, Joey, because I think that the first match to discuss is probably Roma versus Chelsea.
That was, I think that match kind of brought to bear something that we've been talking about might be a problem for Chelsea this season. And Conte, obviously, as you mentioned, wasn't there, and he's kind of the key fulcrum to that team in a lot of different ways. So, you know, you grant them that. But, you know, one thing we've been talking about is it's a thinner squad this year because, you know, it doesn't have the depth that some of the other squads, especially from the Premier League, have to be able to deal with this kind of campaign because, as we remember, Chelsea didn't have to deal with European football, period, last year. And this year, Antonio Conte, the manager, has this preferred, you know, 11, and he rarely changes it. He made one change from the side that ground out that point those 3 points at Bournemouth this past Saturday. And they just, you know, it may be an easy thing to say, but I honestly just thought Chelsea looked tired. They looked like they weren't interested. And that's no, you know, Roma, to their credit, was like, okay. And, you know, Stefan El Shaarawy had a couple of really nice finishes. Diego Perotti's 3rd goal was very nice. But, you know, Chelsea was 2nd best the entire evening, and that was the first loss by a Premier League side this year in the Champions League. Maybe it was a bit overdue because you think about all the matches that they played, you figured someone would have dropped all 3 points by this point in time, but I just thought Chelsea wasn't there, and it gotta say, like, that's what I thought. That's what occurred to me, what we've been talking about. They're just not deep enough for this.
Joey, can I ask you one thing?
Yes, you can.
Who did you pick to win the Premier League this season?
I'm not here to talk about the past. Mark McGuire. Okay. I picked Chelsea. Yes, I did.
Okay. Okay.
Well, once they drop out of the Champions League, you know, it's not going to matter.
Just wanted to touch on that really quickly before moving on. Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you can look at this match and, well, you could take this match over the 2 legs, the Stamford Bridge leg and this leg, and you know, statistically on paper, there wasn't a lot to separate the 2 sides. Possession was pretty even. Shots on goal was pretty even. But where are Chelsea's big players? Where was Eden Hazard yesterday? Where
he's fouling a lot. I think he had like
Morata.
Yeah.
And why did the manager let a player like Diego Costa go? You know, you got to ask a question like that at this point because that's a guy who's going to fight for every ball and for every goal and to try to make things happen. I just didn't see any fight from this team yesterday. And I know that Conte wasn't there, but still, this is the Premier League champion. You're talking about a starting lineup with Cesc Fabregas.
Who was awful.
He was awful.
Yeah, Fabregas
David
was pretty
Luiz,
bad.
The attacking players were so flat yesterday.
You know, I just want to say that's actually an interesting point about, like, Costa. And, you know, his absence is obviously felt from, like, a goal scoring perspective and all the different things he can do in terms of hold-up play, in terms of linking up with people. But, yeah, like, you know, he gets lambasted a lot as, like, this troll, this kind of, like, arch-troll persona. But the truth is, when your team, when your side is like Chelsea was yesterday, or 2 days ago now, and they're just – they're not into it. They're not at it. They're not up for the match. Like, all it takes is Diego Costa, like, elbowing somebody in the stomach, getting a yellow card, causing a dust-up that causes everybody to run in, and suddenly your team has that kind of energy. And I'm not saying that's, like, necessarily a calculated thing on his part, but when you have a player, like you said, that can fight every match for every inch and all that, like, that's not nothing. And the fact that they don't have that – Morata's not that kind of guy. The fact that they don't have that probably did hurt them a little bit.
Yes, although this should not take away from how good Roma have been in this time.
I was going to say.
And this is a team that's fifth in Serie A right now. They're not flying in the league. Over the past few seasons, we've seen them be the team that pushes Juve the most. This is a team that...
whatever that means.
They poke Juve. I wouldn't say push.
It's like a little brother who's like 10 years younger than you or something.
Yes.
It's like they're like flicking their shoulder. It's like it's not. There's no push there. There's nothing.
I'm trying to give Serie A a compliment, Sean.
We're talking about the past. This year, Serie A, you know, is certainly
an interesting competition.
Well, it's the most interesting competition in Europe right now.
I'm not going to quite go that far, but it's pretty interesting.
Did you just Shahan right back?
About Syria, too. What is going on? I mean, let's just start off the bat, right? Roma, like you said, is not the best team in Syria, but they were by far the better team in this match. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even close. I mean, when you really watched it, Perotti could have had a second goal, should have had a second goal. It could have been 4-0. And, you know, Fabregas' giveaway led to, I believe, the first goal. It was an awful giveaway, and then he jogged back. It was a lot of what Chelsea did wrong. You can just say, well, N'Golo Kanté wasn't there. And that seems to be the built-in excuse every time he's not there is, oh, there wasn't the guy who plays like two midfielders standing in the middle of your midfield. But I think it was Gary Neville who made this comment. Whoever decided that Nemanja Matic was surplus to and not, you know, was worth moving on at this point should be fired. Yeah. Because the way that I look at it is I like Bakayoko. He's a good player you brought in. I understand why you could have thought that you didn't need that player. But a match like this showed you exactly why, Conte's not available. Imagine putting Matic in there rather than Fabregas, who clearly wasn't up to the task on this day in this match, was not able to function, and frankly wasn't up to the task a lot of last season.
No.
So he's not a guy that you can rely on in that particular way. Roma deserves all the credit in the world. Stefan El Shaarawy, the Pharaoh, came through in a big way from the get-go. His first goal was phenomenal. What a strike, clean strike. But this is not to say that Chelsea is not good enough to make it out of this group. They still are. They still should. That said, now we aren't sure, right?
A little bit unsure.
I mean, this is a team that they won the championship, and instead of strengthening, they weakened themselves, basically. So Chelsea is now suffering from self-inflicted wounds of not bringing in better players, getting rid of two very good players and bringing in guys who maybe aren't as good as those players.
And it's all so volatile, you know? This is something else we talked about last year, like when they won the league. It's like, for some reason, ever since, I know they repeated under Jose the first time around in the mid-aughts, but like ever since then, it's up and down and up and down, and the pendulum just keeps swinging and swinging. Like, and even in transfers to their performances. Like, they won, you know, at the Wander Metropolitano earlier against Atletico Madrid in this competition. Then they come out against Roma and do that. It's like, you never know which side you're going to get. So yeah, they're still in great shape to get to the knockout stages, partially because, as we mentioned before, Atleti drew with Karabag twice. Inexplicably. So now they've got to beat Roma at home, I believe, and then win at Stamford Bridge to even have a shot. So there's still plenty of intrigue there. And, you know, Chelsea is in a good position to get through, but you just don't know at this side anymore.
I think we can, just to go back to what Alex said, you know, there was no fight, and I think you said as well. And Roma punched him in the mouth, and there was just no fight back. All it was. It was like, and Morata was there, Hazard was there. There are no real excuses about the squad being short, even if Conte is not there. Conte is not the guy that needs to be fighting to score goals. You know, it was they were completely outmanaged, outplayed every single way you look at it. And frankly, I mean, at this point, with Atletico being the way that they are, they could go to Stamford Bridge and get a win. It's like those matches, Atleti could win and could be back in the mix almost immediately. And then who knows who ends up out. So I think that group is one of the most fascinating groups in Europe. But you know, one of the groups that, well, maybe is not as fascinating, but I think we should just mention real quick is Manchester United 2-0 over Benfica, all but through, and another, I wouldn't say necessarily glorious victory.
No.
Daley Blind taking the penalty, I think, was the highlight of this match, in my opinion. him pretty much fighting off everybody else, being like, no, this is my penalty.
Yes, but I like that Jose Mourinho didn't really get enough glory in his own match, so he had to somehow take credit for Tottenham beating Real Madrid.
He was on fire yesterday. Did you see, I think one of the first things they asked him in the post-game interview, too, was like, you know, what did you think of the team's performance tonight? And his answer was like, no. That's all he said. I mean, Benfica has no points. They haven't beaten or drawn anybody in this competition, and it looked for a long time like they were going to get at least a point out of this match. And you mentioned Nemanja Matic. He scored the first goal. It was a long-range effort that came off the post and hit the poor Miles Villar, I might be mispronouncing his name. The poor 18-year-old hits him right in the back after the deflection and goes in. Like,
oh, that poor kid.
That's how close, you know. Martial missed a penalty against him in the 14th minute. It's just United wasn't at it, but to their credit, they won. And they've won every game so far. And on one hand, you could say, well, this group is trash, you know, they should be doing that. On the other hand, United's like, we are doing that. So, I mean, it's hard for me to, I'm not down on United by any means. I still think they have a great chance to make a run once they reach the knockout stages. But yeah, like yesterday, those kind of performances slip in there every now and then, and you're like, what are you doing?
Well, those were Tuesday's matches, and I think we should move on to Wednesday's games. And there were some doozies. I think that is the official word that has been used for this. Tottenham 3-1 over Real Madrid.
Over who now? What?
Yeah, I think we should discuss that one. And also, I think Man City 4-2 Napoli for the two best teams in Europe, in my opinion, playing at probably the most entertaining style of football possible to be played currently anywhere on the planet. But you know what? Let's start with Tottenham and Real Madrid. And I have some notes on this match, but before I get into my notes, I want to hear what you guys think. What do you think happened? Do you think Tottenham just completely dominated Real Madrid? Was it just Harry Kane coming back, and so the Wembley curse is gone forever now?
It looked, you know, to me, it kind of seemed like, on one hand, you could say that Tottenham arrived, quote unquote, and got their signature European victory, maybe of the Champions League era. You know, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think that's kind of like in the conversation right there. The other hand, it's like, God, this is, you know, I want to feel better about it for Tottenham, being, you know, like a general supporter of English sides myself, but Real Madrid has been just trash so much this season.
Before you go on too much further, I just want to say, I still think that the signature victory for Tottenham in the Champions League era is when
I know what's coming.
When Mike Conn lost his soul. Back to back, lost his soul.
Fair.
Okay, go on, though. Sorry to interrupt.
Ew, it's okay. I can't watch a Real Madrid side that looks so completely out of sorts and disorganized and not think to myself, this side has not gotten it together really all season. They're still eight points back, I think, in La Liga. And they just didn't look up for it yesterday. And I think Tottenham looked way too up for it. And they were, not in a bad way, like they were absolutely fantastic. I think they recognized the opportunity here. And I think the interesting thing is that we'll obviously talk about the rest of the group for a second, but the fact that there was a winner in this match and that the points were not shared does keep Borussia Dortmund technically alive to be able to advance if they want.
You're living in a fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps them alive, but I agree, it's probably not going to happen. But if those two teams had just, you know, man, I'm still bummed. God.
Wait, at least he's got the World Cup to look forward.
You trying to make me cry on the podcast?
Yes. 100%.
Guys, we're picking on Joey today.
Alex, save me here. I don't know what to say.
The game that this reminded me of, actually, was the 2009 Champions League when Real Madrid were thrashed by Liverpool 4-0, which precipitated an overhaul of the team that saw the likes of Wesley Sneijder, Arjen Robben, Fabio Cannavaro, Raul, pretty much all these guys would be out the door within the next season or two.
And all of them went on to fail miserably.
Yes, they all never heard from again. But that's sort of what precipitated the makeover of the team as kind of the new Galacticos era that we're currently sort of have been living through. And I wonder if we're sort of coming to the end of the cycle of this team, because we know they lost on the weekend. We know they've been less than perfect, but I mean, they just got blown away by Tottenham. Like, it's one thing to go and lose, you know, but they just got blown away. Kane was going around Ramos like he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Dele Alli looked like the best player in the world yesterday. And Cristiano, I'll tell you, when he tries all of his tricks and flicks and everything and nothing comes of it, it just starts to look almost pathetic at times, where he's doing the stepovers and then just not getting any results. And you could see it in his own facial expression that it's like, why isn't this working now?
You know, that's interesting that you bring up like what happened in 2009, because I think that you could make that argument from the standpoint of, yes, maybe there's some veterans. I don't know if there's going to be an overhaul. I mean, we've all, you know, mentioned before, like, we love Marco Asensio. You know, there's a lot of young guys on this team that are finally starting to get playing time that are going to be the future. And then Isco, you know, is in that conversation too. And that's fantastic. But yeah, you could see. So I don't know. I wouldn't go like total overhaul for this particular side. But yeah, don't you think there could be like, you could ship out maybe Bale finally. You could maybe get rid of Benzema. Like, I don't know. Just some of the.
Bale didn't even play yesterday. He wasn't even on the bench. So, I mean, I don't think you would say this result means you should ship out Bale by any means.
No, but I think, you know, it could lead to more playing time for, you know, it could lead to like a youth revolution, so to speak.
It could lead to a new coach is what it could lead
to. Zidane?
Yeah, I don't know. How much longer before Zidane, if he doesn't turn things around?
Are you kidding me?
No, seriously.
I don't think
you don't
right
think?
Now. No, I don't think so not at all right now.
This is Real Madrid, gentlemen.
I understand, no, but Real Madrid hadn't won the league in 5 years before last year. Yeah. Zidane won them.
Okay.
They've won three of the last four Champions League, including first ever back-to-back on Zidane's first year and a half on the job.
I think, yeah, he gets this year to fail.
I don't think he's even going to fail, because I think they're going to make it to the knockout rounds. And I think, you know, when you actually analyze these goals, right? And yes, there were many a moments when Ronaldo didn't look at his best. And granted, there were moments when Real Madrid did not play Real Madrid football. But on the other hand, there were moments where he got shots and they hit it right at Lloris, and he made like saves where, you know, 5 feet to the left, 5 feet to the right, those are goals, and we're not talking about this. And then when you actually look at Tottenham's goals, okay, the first goal, Harry Winks plays what is an incredible ball to Trippier, who first time hits it across the box. Oh, wait, Trippier was offside to begin with. That shouldn't have been a goal.
Okay.
Dele Alli made a run. Good. Good for him. And he finished it. You don't stop playing. You play to the whistle. Credit to Tottenham. They, you know, had the ability to play it. And that came off of Harry Kane actually charging Nacho and forcing a throw in where it should have just been ball out of bounds and really goal kick.
And real quick, that was kind of funny, the offside, because none of the Real he was offside, I agree, but none of the Real Madrid guys called for it immediately. So I think it was just one of those weird kind of like, I think Rio Ferdinand, someone before has called it, there's certain like optical illusion moments where, you know, the things line up perfectly in terms of players from the referee standpoint, and they just can't tell. And I don't think any of the players could tell there. So even though he was offside, it was very weird that nobody, you know, complained about that.
And then the second goal, Sergio Ramos, just, I don't know what he was doing. He wasn't even on the ball, and he just decided to make a slide up field. And he basically just was completely out of position, and it led to that wonderful counter, beautiful ball across to Eriksen, who Modric couldn't keep up with because that should have been Sergio Ramos's man to begin with. It's like, and you know, like, well done, and frankly, he left Nacho out to dry. But then you think about it, you're like, oh, right, Nacho's not even supposed to be their first choice. It's supposed to be Varane. So I don't think those are alarm bells going off, but Nacho's still a good central defender. Still wasn't his fault. Sergio Ramos just had one of those David Luiz moments, which he is prone to do from time to time.
Or did David Luiz have a Sergio Ramos moment?
Whatever you want to say. But
there's a rabbit hole for you.
but so those are two of the goals. And then the third goal, you know, Eriksen, well, that was just a heck of a good counter, and that was after Real Madrid had to be, you know, searching, and so they had to put bodies forward, and then eventually Ronaldo does finish one of those chances, and it's 3-1. It ends up looking like, oh, they got completely outplayed, but like I said, Ronaldo had a couple chances where he just hit it right at Lloris. He hits one of those to the left or the right, and we're not having this conversation at all. Yeah. Bale wasn't available. He's probably their, you know, if he's not starting, he's their first man off the bench. Super sub, whatever you want to call it. I don't think it's at all times to panic, but I do think that, and you know, you guys are talking about the youth revolution at Real Madrid. If you look at the squad that played on the weekend, Zidane is bringing in youth into the team. They lost to Girona, and there's no excuse for that. If you would actually look at these two teams, and technically you would say on form, they're both kind of off of form because Tottenham is coming in off the loss to Manchester United and Real Madrid lost to Girona. Tell me what is worse, especially when you consider Tottenham didn't have Harry Kane for that match.
Right.
There's no way in hell you're saying that Real Madrid is coming in better form than Tottenham. That's just not true. So losing at Old Trafford, it's like, okay, that happens, especially when you're missing your best player. Everyone's back. You're playing at home, even though it's Wembley. And even though it's Real Madrid, I don't, you know, it was a, generally in football, things happen where that's, goals come out of mistakes or they come out of moments of brilliance. I think this was a couple of mistakes more than it was brilliance. Like, credit to Harry Winks. I think he's a phenomenal player. He played the right ball, but that was an offside goal. Simple as that. It, you know, Sergio Ramos doing God knows what, like pretty much not even on the ball, decides to like lunge out and, you know, pretty much try and pick up a man upfield at the halfway line when he should be tracking back and getting his man. So, I mean, all credit to Tottenham. They played through the game plan. Mauricio Pochettino is a genius. G, whichever one you want to go with.
He's a G.
He's a G, baby. But I give credit to Tottenham. They came out and they played. They did what they're supposed to. But both those teams, I think, are easily going to make it to the knockout rounds. And I don't think Zidane's job is in jeopardy one bit. I think this is definitely Tottenham. This is definitely Barcelona's year to win the league and reclaim it because, frankly, I don't think they stand a chance in Europe. They had a nil-nil. Like, it wasn't exactly like a banner day for Spanish football, you know, or banner match day, I'll call it. So that's my take on it. I don't think it was nearly as bad. And you know, you guys, I think it'll be celebrated. But what are your thoughts?
No, I mean, look, all the things you're saying are perfectly legit. But I think by the same token, you know, Dele Alli came very close at the end. Could have completed a hat trick. I think Tottenham were a bit in awe of themselves for what they were doing at times yesterday. And I think if they have taken initiative, they actually could have racked up a much worse score.
I think that first goal 5-0 changes it, right? When you get that first offside goal, and then all of a sudden the confidence pops up and the game changes entirely, and then because of that, I think in part you have Sergio Ramos kind of make that mistake of being a little bit too far up the pitch, which leads to the second goal because you're all pushed up. It changed the complexion of the game, and that's where the goals came from. And frankly, there were a couple of moments where, you know, the balls would be, there were just scrums where the ball was in the goal box and Real Madrid just
could not punch it in for some reason.
And that was the thing. It was like there were moments. It wasn't like it was just one-sided entirely. Now, like I found that game, you know, that was number two on my games to watch or matches to watch on the day. And it proved to be the second best match of the day. Thankfully, I thought I was entertained by it. I thought it was, you know, gripping and dramatic. And I think there's a lot more to it. Even watching it at 3-0, I thought there was a lot more to that match than a 3-0 match and 3-1. But yeah, Tottenham deserved the points. They got the points. And I think it's good to see them punch their ticket into the knockout rounds. And they can kind of focus on the Premier League. And they're definitely in that competition too. So good on them. They're playing a good season. And I'm happy to see them do that. Anything else you guys want to add on this, and then I'll move on to the next match.
I just think to wrap it up, like you always caution against reading too much from certain results during the group stage. There's a couple results like this every year that get people's eyes, you know, raise eyebrows and things like that. And for Real Madrid, from their perspective, I think it's very hard to be everyone's Champions League final every night and get up for those kind of things. And Tottenham definitely had more, you know, of that energy and enthusiasm yesterday, and it's understandable. And just because Real Madrid lost like this, I don't think it means Zidane's in trouble, and I don't think it means they're, you know, not still one of the favorites by any means.
Does this result, in your guys' opinion, or already are they already there? Is it time to start regarding Tottenham as an elite club?
No, because they still haven't won anything.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, but they're close.
They can beat elite clubs. I think they've proven that. I think they can compete with elite clubs on the pitch. But when you just look at it history-wise and you just look at trophies, they just don't have it yet. Hopefully they get it so that we don't have to have that conversation at all. Because on the pitch, in any 90-minute match, I'm not betting against Tottenham against anybody, really, because they have the ability to do it. And Harry Kane is phenomenal. He's in tremendous form. I will take him to score more often than not on against anybody. Now, moving on to the other match that I've referenced a few times. In my opinion, the two best clubs in Europe playing each other. Napoli, representing Serie A, and Manchester City, representing the Premier League. Both these teams play a very, very, very high up-tempo style of attacking football. And you know what? If you didn't watch this match, just go back and watch it. Watch all 90 minutes of it and then watch it again, because this was probably the best 90 minutes of Champions League football you will see the entire group stages in terms of quality, in terms of play, and in terms of coaching, frankly. It is lightning quick on both ends, and the quality is there. You know, I have my own takes on this match, and I went back and watched it again between last night and this morning. So before I share what my thoughts are, I'm going to open it up to you guys. Alex, what did you think about that match?
Well, I was impressed with Napoli, of course, but I was sort of in awe of City, because whatever Napoli seemed to do, City would find a way to sort of keep... You know, you kept thinking, okay, Napoli's back in this. They've got the second goal now. It's tied up. And then before you can even really catch your breath, City have taken the lead again. I think Napoli is maybe the team that we've seen test City the most this season in any competition. So I give them a lot of credit. And I think that they're definitely in this competition, and I think will be a match for most teams. But you've got to start looking at this City team as like possibly on another level from just about anybody else right now.
Yeah, this is, you talk about an elite club. I think this is an elite club. And I think them doing what they did to Napoli and beating them twice is the signature thing that they've done this season. It's, you know, Liverpool, the 4-0 or whatever it was nice. Obviously, they're off to a tremendous start in the Premier League. I think they're 8 points up now on second place.
They haven't really played anyone sort of
exactly, like of consequence necessarily. And this is, you know, they were the last, Napoli was the last unbeaten, or was the last team in Europe to have a perfect start, right, or something like that. Like, they had either won all their matches or they had not lost yet in Europe's top five leagues. And then
they had a draw with Inter, which Spalletti was able to pull off, but they have been perfect in Serie A other than that.
And that's, you know, and to see City, and it's not, you know, let's be honest here. It wasn't a comprehensive beatdown or anything like that. Like, Napoli was still showed a lot of quality in both of those matches, I thought, but it just speaks to how good City is and how they're humming under Pep Guardiola now, that they were able to do this. And, you know, it almost favors them a little bit, because you knew Napoli wasn't going to try to gum up the works like some other clubs might against City. And so if you go mano a mano with, you know, wanting to be open and wanting to have that kind of attacking flair, like, City's tough to match in that regard. And I know it wasn't always the attackers. I mean, Stones and Otamendi scored right on headers, I believe. So it's just the goals come from everywhere. And ultimately, it's just too much to handle for most teams, and including a club of Napoli's quality. So I think it just speaks to how impressive City has been that they were able to do this.
Okay, so I'll share my thoughts on this match, which I have plenty. And the first 30 minutes of this, we'll call it the second leg, but the match of the São Paulo, all Napoli, like dominant Napoli. And City could not touch the ball. Napoli outplayed them completely, thoroughly, and the goal that was created during those 30 minutes was spectacular. Insigne playing a 1-2 with Mertens. Mertens was
so nice.
Doing exactly what Mertens does.
And then the finish.
Finish was spectacular, the way he opened up his body, Insigne did, and put it to the far post. Now, that was the first third of that match.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the injury. And that injury caused a little bit of a delay, ended up having to bring in 35-year-old Christian Maggio, who I love the man, because he's a club, like, he's been with the club forever, but he comes on and he essentially has to be on Leroy Sané now. And that's
tough.
That within the first like, what, 3 minutes of the restart, City scored their goal, they level it up. And Maggio had a nightmare day for the rest of the day. That changed the complexion of the match, but it also really, really highlighted the difference between Napoli and City. Because I think these are the two best teams in Europe, But the difference
better is, than PSG even?
Yes. Only because of the way that they play. And the consistency with which these two teams play. I'm not saying that PSG won't be a better team, but I think that right now, if you actually had to say who are the teams playing the most consistent, best football in all of Europe, it is Napoli. And I mean, Napoli has some huge scalps already. They've beaten Juve in the Super Cup. They've played against really the best teams in Italy and won.
And even going back to the first match of the Manchester City, they were... After City went ahead,
that was the thing. In the first match, they came out slow, and everybody said, you know, they gave them too much respect. But the first 30 minutes of this match really showed you how good they can be against a team that is the best team
in Europe.
Incredibly
good,
like the best team in Europe. But the difference between these two teams, I think, came in watching that substitution, because when Goulam goes off and Maggio comes on, that shows you Napoli just doesn't have depth. The difference between these two teams is depth. Because when you looked at Manchester City's bench, the three people they brought on during the course of this match, David Silva, Bernardo Silva, and Gabriel Jesus. those are quite a different level of substitutions than, you know.
Not too shabby.
Marco Rog. Yeah, Adam Unis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not really comparable. And I think that is the biggest difference between these two sides. But first 11 versus first 11, when you saw them play at the São Paulo, or even when you saw them at the City of Manchester Stadium, or the Etihad as it's known now, it was the exact... You were looking at the two best teams playing the best football, and both of them were able to dominate each other at different points and completely thoroughly dominate them. At home, it was actually impressive to watch the way that Napoli played. Now, you know, you look at the goals that actually they gave up. The first, we just talked about that first one, which came right after the substitution, and basically Otamendi gets in a header, and you're like, okay, it kind of broke the flow that Napoli had, because before that, City almost looked like they had no chance to get in the match, and I think that stoppage kind of gave them the chance to rethink their strategy. From then on, the match kind of changed, but then you look at the second goal where City go ahead. How do they go ahead? Stones jumps over Christian Maggio to score the goal. Maggio wouldn't even be on the pitch.
I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast, by the way.
I love Maggio. He's a good guy. He's been around forever, and it's not that he doesn't deserve to be in the match. It's that he was never supposed to be in this match. So you look at that, and then the penalty that, you know, Albiol picks up, and Albiol, credit to him. I mean, there's a name that you didn't think would still be around at this point. No. Old Real Madrid man. There's when you look at this team, the Napoli team itself, the first 11 is actually very, very respectable. You know, you have guys like Pepe Reina in goal, Albiol, Koulibaly, who actually didn't really have a very good game in this one, in my opinion. But then Allen's a midfielder that's really come up. And then Hamsik has really kind of evolved from being that front trio. And we've talked about it a little bit in the past, but him going to the midfield and really kind of playing the Kevin De Bruyne role, if you will. And then you have the front three of Callejon, who just kind of fights. And it's not necessarily as much quality, another former Real Madrid guy, but he just kind of fights. And then you have the quality of Mertens and Insigne. And those are the two that really, you know, you really saw Insigne go on some runs. And Mertens, too, you know, he had some chances early where he didn't really hit it with much power and much force, but he was in those positions. And there were a couple of times where he was looking for flicks. There was one time where he kept calling for the ball over the top. Eventually gave him the ball over the top, and he got falsely called offside. But he would have been in on goal on that one if he hadn't been. So there was a lot of next-level quality being played in this match on both ends. But when you really broke it down, I thought the difference came in the fact that Manchester City's depth is just at a different level. I mean, the players I mentioned, they didn't have to start. Those guys being available to come on, I mean, you know, it's a luxury to say, okay, we're going to go with Aguero, Sané, Sterling, and De Bruyne. And, oh, right, we're going to start Gundogan and Fernandinho to play as, like, holding players. And credit to... Also, Fabian Delph deserves a shout-out because he's been playing incredibly well.
I was literally just going to say that I can't believe Fabian Delph still has a deserved place in this team. Yeah.
Well, and...
Good for him.
Yeah. Raheem Sterling.
Well, Sterling has 10 goals now in the season.
You know, why did Guardiola need Alexis Sanchez, you have to wonder, when you've got Raheem Sterling, especially if you look at the way the two seasons have contrasted one another.
I mean, check the tape, but I've been the only one consistently saying, I don't understand why Sterling keeps getting all this stick. He's been great for them every time he plays, all season long. Go back to the start of the season. Whenever he plays, he actually contributes. He creates. And it was good. It was good to see him get that final goal for the 4-2. But that, I mean, I thought this match entirely changed on that first substitution that just completely kind of flipped the match on his head. Because before that, Napoli was on a different level. But my hope, honestly, isn't that Napoli gets back into this and ends up qualifying. I want them to actually finish fourth and not even end up in Europa League. Because when you look at this squad, the first 11 is good enough to win Serie A.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the depth to do it unless they're not in the Europa League or the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, as good as they are and as good as I think they can genuinely compete with any team in Europe and play them, I think it's more important for them to win Serie A this year. And I think they're in position to do it. I think that they have the squad to do that. I don't think they have the squad to compete on multiple fronts. And it was apparent. I mean, the guys they had to go to. And, you know, once you lose a guy like Milik, which they did, you really don't have the depth. And so, I mean, like I said, this match, go back and watch it. It is the best football you will see in the Champions League group stages, because these are the two best teams playing the best football in Europe / the planet right now.
Yeah, I think selfishly I kind of want to see somebody, like we joked earlier about Juve kind of batting away the challenges of teams in recent years. But if you have a Napoli side, for example, that legitimately challenges for the top of Serie A, it would make things very interesting. It already is very interesting in Serie A right now. And, you know, I think match day two is when they lost, Napoli did, to Shakhtar Donetsk, which was obviously a surprise. So now they've got to beat Shakhtar at home and then hope City beats Shakhtar away. But you got to figure City, I mean, how much are they really, if they've clinched first place out of that group by that point, how much are they really going to go after Shakhtar? Because the best that Napoli can do is tie with them on 9 points with Shakhtar. And then I think they've got to make up like a 3 or 4 goal differential right now.
Which, if Shakhtar lose a couple of matches, though, would
happen. Yeah, it's very feasible, obviously, but it's not overly likely. And you're right. Like, if you can just, I mean, Feyenoord's really bad, so I don't know if they're gonna finish. If Napoli's gonna finish fourth, they probably won't. But yeah, like it might be the best for them to have this happen. Just kind of like, you know, talked about earlier a little bit. Like, Chelsea's squad depth is a problem for them. So, you know, if Napoli if they have the opportunity to kind of go full bore at Serie A, I think just for the non-partisans, it would be much more entertaining that way.
Yeah, I think they need to avoid Europa League as much as they possibly can. Like, I think they should genuinely just start going and kicking balls in their own net.
Yeah.
See how that treats them. Because, I mean, the worst possible scenario is for them to end up.
Who knows? Maybe Arsenal will actually advance in the knockout stages if they draw Napoli and Napoli does that.
Nope. Anyway.
They're not advancing against Red Star Belgrade as we speak, so I don't know.
Anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and touch on some MLS and then talk a little bit about the matches that are coming up this weekend. But, yeah, so we'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Energy Drinks. Energy Drinks. They're awful for you, but energy drinks.
It's my beer!
And we are back. So there is something called the MLS Cup playoffs going on. Yeah, you can read about more of that on FC Yahoo. I think there's Henry Bushnell's at some of the matches and all. Moving on to the Premier League.
Wow.
That's it, huh?
I mean, yeah, unless you guys really want to talk about something.
It's
all right. It doesn't really matter. Moving on to the Premier League this weekend. There are some big matches coming up. Alex, what are you looking forward to this weekend?
Well, you got a big one on Sunday with Manchester City beating Arsenal at the Etihad by a scoreline of 4-0.
Did this already happen?
What?
No, but it's pretty much... No, I think it's, you know... Well, let's be realistic. I don't think Arsenal has any chance of winning this game.
I think if they try to do the 3 in the back and play open, they're going to get ripped to shreds. I think 6-0 would be flattering in that case.
Maybe not that pessimistic, but as an Arsenal fan...
Oh, yeah, Captain Jack.
Yeah.
There's the steel you need in the midfield.
There you go. Until he's carted off at halftime on a stretcher.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Look.
Whoa. I thought you meant carted. I didn't. No. Not injury. I'm not supporting any of that stuff.
I think there's not a lot to be optimistic for an Arsenal point of view in this game.
But isn't that always the case when Arsenal pulls off these results? When you actually expect them to lose, they win, and when you expect them to win, they lose.
It's true.
Sometimes I think it's more like. When they're kind of backed up against the wall is when they'll produce a result. But they're not really backed up against the wall right now.
Let me just say, we're speaking of an Arsenal team that is currently being held scoreless at home by Red Star Belgrade.
But they're saving everybody for the weekend, Alex.
Yeah. That lineup is academy level. Mohamed Elneny is playing in the center of the back three, in case anybody's wondering how that lineup is going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jack Wilshere is playing, right?
He is indeed.
Okay. Well, they have a chance. Give them hope.
There you go. Okay.
And then the other match, Joey, that's highlighting for the Premier League.
Chelsea, Man United. And I think that...
A couple of small clubs.
Yeah.
Up and coming.
I've heard of them.
You know, these little guys, these minnows you might have heard of before.
Right.
Man, I'll tell you what. Like, last weekend with the Tottenham United match, obviously it's too early in the season to make this statement declaratively. But I really felt, you know, the winner of that match would kind of establish themselves in that second tier behind City in the race, and that obviously happened to be United. And this match, I think, is kind of Chelsea's. Like, if they want to keep touch with the league leaders, they're already 8 points back. A win would draw them level with United. A loss, I think, then you're just kind of talking about that sort of sets the tone, sets the stage, if you will. They're going to be battling for Champions League spots. They're not going to be battling for a league title. I think that you can... say that already. And the way that Mourinho loves to set up in these games, it might be two big names, but we are all cautious of the fact that this might actually be kind of a boring match, a bit of a slog. And, Mourinho knows Chelsea.
Boring Mourinho.
Could be for those of us who wake up early on the West Coast to watch Man City Arsenal, it could be a good occasion to take a little nap for the rest of your day.
Yeah. But, no, I think it's an important match, and I think that, you want to say that the City has a chance to drop points, but I don't think they're going to. I think we all agree that that's not going to happen. So if you look at it from United's perspective, it's like, well, maybe you got to go out and win this, because I don't think anybody expects City to not get all 3 points against Arsenal. And if you draw at Stamford Bridge or even lose, then all of a sudden, you undo the work you just did last Saturday by escaping Tottenham and then winning that fixture. So, lots of storylines, lots of ways that this could play out. I think it's a great match to have jumping into the international break afterward.
Yeah, and then over in Germany, we have Der Klassiker, which is... Christian Pulisic losing to Bayern Munich, more than likely.
You know what? I'm going to stage a protest one of these days.
I'm just saying he's cursed, clearly, at this point. No, it should be a good match, and it's in front of the Yellow Wall at the Signal.
Westfalenstadion.
Yeah, it has multiple names for that thing.
I just
call it the Yellow Wall because it is awesome.
It's great.
Especially during Bundesliga matches. One of those interesting things, like, they don't actually let the standing room go on for the Champions League because of restrictions on crowd and all that. You have to have seats. But in the Bundesliga, this is the fixture to watch because that wall is bouncing the entire match. And
boy, how funny would it be if Dortmund can't do anything but draw Apoel Nicosia from Cyprus in the Champions League, then turn around and beat Bayern Munich? How would that make Bayern feel?
Well, Bayern wasn't entirely convincing in Celtic.
No, they weren't.
They were.
Yeah, we're not talking about a vintage Bayern Munich side this season, guys. And there's 3 points separating them at the top of the table. So I think this one...
This could be the best match.
But I think they have improved since Pankis came on. So.
I agree.
Certainly.
But I think if you look at the three matches, for the reasons we talked about, the prospect of United turning it into a slog, the prospect of City tearing Arsenal apart, I think this is going to be the best bet for best match of the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree, but I think that as much as we expect Arsenal to lose, you just don't know with that team.
You're right.
Just the fact of the matter. It's like, yes, I expect them to get completely beat down, but then you look at City and you say, well, they just had a really, really intense match in Naples.
They're due to get turned over by somebody.
And at some point, like, that streak is going to come to an end, and you just don't run through the entire season. At some point, you'd stumble a little bit. And, granted, like I said, you know, Bernardo Silva, David Silva, and Gabriel Jesus came off the bench, so it's not like they were really going to be. I expect all three of them to be starting.
Yeah.
But at some level, you know, I think you do lose a little bit when you with at some point De Bruyne is going to go in a bit of a funk because he's been incredible so far this season. At some point, it's just natural for that to happen. And Arsenal is a good enough team that on their day can catch City if City's off.
The quality is there with players like Sanchez and Ozil. Sure. The quality. Sure. And Lacazette. And Alex, you'll back me up on this. The thing that drives the Arsenal supporters crazy is not necessarily the persistent underachievement. It wouldn't be what it is without the combination of that. And every now and then, like you said, they'll win a match like this, and the supporters will be like, why does this not happen more often?
Yeah.
So I guess you're right. You know, anything could happen this weekend. Right.
Why doesn't it happen more often? Joey?
God, what time is it?
I think we're running out of time, guys.
Well, if you guys want to stay here for
Danny Welbeck hat trick.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I think we are out of time. So for Joey, actually, before we go away, just a quick circle back on our MLS roundup. Hopefully next time we'll just get Henry Bushnell in to talk about it.
Henry, we need you.
Yeah, and I think they're in the semifinals of the conferences.
Semis, yes.
Yeah, which really means they're in like the second round and there's still way too many teams for us to talk about. So I'm just not going to talk about it. For Alex Baker, Joey Galino, this is Shahan Ahmed. Thank you for listening as always. And go find us, you know, on iTunes or wherever you listen to us, on SoundCloud or Audio Boom. And, you know, like us, follow us, do all that. And if you're not already following, follow FC Yahoo on Twitter. Also, facebook.com/FCYahoo, all one word. Find our content, read it, check it out, give us some clicks, and we'll keep creating for you. Anyway, thanks for listening.
I'll tell you how it's going to go. It's going to be me like, yeah. I mean,
promotion relegation, we'd be winning the World Cup next summer.
We'd be totally structured like the other leagues that are better than us.
We'd have made up 100 years of progress in just 2 decades easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totes.
This is all being recorded. I'm definitely your lady. I'm going to leave this in.
That's this fun. Is Matt Baker, Alex.
Yes.
Galino Yahoo.
If you like our commentary, comments. @JGalinoYahoo. If you don't like my commentary, @LeanderAlphabet.